Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice-looking Thursday. We have an abbreviated edition of The Drive for you this afternoon because the Auburn women participating in the SEC-ACC Challenge will be at Virginia, and that ball game tips at 5 o'clock, so we will be on the air until around 4:40 this afternoon.
Still doing the podcast, and this will be the abbreviated episode, will be uploaded as a podcast as well. No Justin Ferguson today. We talked to him a little bit earlier in the week before.
Did you talk to him after the game?
I have not talked to him post game. I'm going to talk to him. He's coming in to record a podcast with us a few minutes after we get done.
Oh, okay.
So he's just getting, you know, he just got back to Auburn.
I mean, I saw him there.
We saw his seats before the game. He showed, you know, showed
that.
The picture he sent me.
I read a column from Brian Stultz about the experience of being there in front of the Cameron Crazies.
Adam Cole also was right there in the front
one,
row.
One thing that he took away from it, he said he didn't realize that students knew those many foul words. He said, but the one thing he took away he said next time, if he ever gets to go again, he would either take an umbrella or a rain jacket. He's never had so much spit hit him in the back.
Yeah, no, so, someone else made reference to the shower of spittle,
yeah,
which just sounds truly disgusting. I've been in front of some boisterous student sections in my time, both covering Auburn and doing radio for the Trojans. I've never had a problem with that, and that's true. You know what? That makes me grateful that, just like Andy Burcham, when I called a game at Duke, they had me practically on the roof, right? Like they put you, you know, up in the catwalk at the very top and the very back of one side of the arena, and that's mid-court, but still, you know, the very top and the very back. Andy Burcham posted a picture on social media, and I've never felt as relieved to have been sat there as, you know, now that I'm hearing these stories about, you know, the rain shower
that was crazy.
Oh, Lord. Ferguson probably wore his baseball cap, so he was a little bit safer from it than I think some other people. But still, that's just stomach churning. And it's a minor thing as part of a heavyweight title fight, Bill. And, you know, the North Carolina and Memphis games were kind of one-sided, so they didn't feel as epic as the other three. But the Houston game, the Iowa State game, and the Duke game are three of the best regular season college basketball games I've ever seen. Like in drama,
yes,
and
mm-hmm,
in the high level, I think that you've seen from both teams, and the, you know, on the Auburn side, you know, the consistent performances of Jani Broome, and the, you know, the contributions of different players at different times around Jani Broome. And the other constant in these big games has been Tahad. I mean, Tahad Pettiford, right? I mean, the three.
Oh, no, we have seen no stage seems too big for Tahad. I mean, the offense really clicks when Tahad's in the ballgame. And he had 20 tying for team, you know, high honors last night with Jani Broome. The only problem right now with Tahad, problem with Tahad is his proclivity for drawing fouls. Someone pointed
this
out.
Might be a speed of the game thing, right? I mean, that's when you're jumping from high school, because we've seen Chaney, who, although Cheney still seems to struggle
Cheney
with it,
still gets
but that's some, but yeah. that's a, you know, I would wonder if that's, I know a lot of these guys are coming from a lower level, but you know, guys like Cheney and Tejada, I feel like there's a drastic jump up in competition, right?
Oh yeah, but he's played some big time, you know, AAU and things like that. So I don't know if necessarily speed of the game, maybe it's just the way things are called. But right now, Tejada is averaging about 7.5 fouls per 40 minutes played, and I know a lot of people are saying he's got to play 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, last night he played 20 and had 4 fouls. So I mean. He's got to cut back on the fouls, and that is one reason why Tejada's not getting more minutes.
I think they also like, I think Bruce likes the stable hand of Denver Jones.
And the defense of Denver Jones.
And the defense of Denver yeah. Jones. And so pulling Denver off the floor, and I granted you could play Tejada and Denver together, but Chad and Miles were playing huge minutes last night as well. It's not, you know, it's about pulling someone off the floor as well. So I wonder if yeah, I wonder. I mean, it's a great problem to have, especially with a veteran like J.P. Pegues sort of relegated right now to a role behind those other guys. You know, it seems clear. What Denver 28 minutes last night? J.P. 4. Tejada had 18. You know, they split the point guard minutes up mm-hmm. sort of that way. I think the but for both Cheney and Tejada, the ability to defend without fouling is going to be really important if they're going to play high leverage minutes down the stretch.
Oh, absolutely. Cheney's got to do more. And last night was tough because Dylan picked up fouls early. Then Cheney got Dylan and Cheney each had 3, and then Janai fouled out right there at the end of the ball game.
And they called it, you know what, they called it tight, but I've been watching games at Cameron Indoor for decades.
Hey, that didn't surprise me. What we saw last night didn't surprise me. We talked about it
little
yesterday. Yeah. That's what you're going to be up against when you're going into a place like that.
And I'm not calling out anyone, but if you just started watching college basketball in the last 18 months or something, maybe you're surprised that a game's going to get called that tight in Cameron Indoor. I'm not, right? Like, that's a... frankly, there were a couple of times where they went to the review, and I thought they were gonna upgrade, right? Like, I was thinking, oh man, they're gonna really try to keep this, you know, keep this thing under control, and they're gonna really try to keep the, you know, the tension down. And instead, no, they wave stuff off. The Chad play comes to mind, right? Where they review afterward and they decide. Like, I was so worried.
I had no idea, though. They didn't call anything. There was nothing. It's like we stopped action and then just, okay, let's play.
Yeah, not even a common foul on it.
That was very odd.
A bizarre situation. Yeah. And, you know, maybe they thought the Duke player embellished, you know, and that played a role in it. I mean, because I was just – right, you were worried about – especially after the flagrant one earlier in the game.
Which, yeah – was not a huge fan of that.
Which Billis dismissed immediately. He's like, oh, they're not going to upgrade this. And then
you've seen sometimes when part of the arm hits the head, regardless if it appears intentional or not, it can be called. It was a shame it was called. It definitely was a factor in a run by Duke last night.
I thought the most impressive stretch for Auburn, it's easy to say the beginning, right? It's easy to say the first 5 minutes of the game or whatever, that the Chad jumper makes it 15-8. You know, you have that sort of explosion of points to begin the, you know, the it's before the Duke timeout, right? It's 13-2. The Miles three that makes it 13-2 is the but I thought when the chips were down for Auburn in the third quarter again, just like Houston and especially like we were saying second half of the Iowa State game, to see the way Auburn rallied, because when that game gets to, I mean, when Duke gets the lead near and then into double figures in the second half, right? When it's 54-42, when Duke's building a big lead, you don't feel like a lot of teams don't have that run.
No,
in
you're
the
right.
Second half at Cameron Indoor.
That's a situation where a lot of teams are going to end up losing by 20.
Right, and instead it was Janai and Tejada. And a couple of free throws from Chad, but that Auburn went on the run to make it a tie basketball game, right? That the at the you know and you know what was what did Auburn eventually lead How close do they get?
No, I don't think Auburn got the lead back. They had the opportunity to get the lead a couple of times when it was like 69-68. Remember, they had the ball a couple of times. I don't believe that they retook the lead, but they came.
I think Auburn had the ball down two a couple of times in the final 10 minutes. You're right.
They had the ball down one, actually. I know one time, but it was a quick possession. It was like they had it and didn't. But yes, they had the maybe it was down two and a three would have given them the lead. But yes, they cut it, came back and cut it, and then and then you got to credit Duke as well.
Tejada attempted a three with 6:31 left that would have given Auburn
that
the
looked
lead.
Online.
Yeah, it was.
Oh,
it was. It was an online front rim, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was, and Auburn and that was about as close as Auburn got to retaking the lead in the final minutes. But no, Auburn fought back in a way that makes you think. And how about this? It had not occurred to me that this was actually Auburn's first true road game.
Right.
Right? Because Auburn had played.
A lot of teams played neutral games.
Well, Houston.
Games,
and because Houston seems like a road game because they played the game a mile from Houston's campus in the NBA arena in that town. But no, it was, Auburn's first. And I don't know how many tests you're going to face that serious on the road. Like, I don't know where you go.
There could be a couple in the conference.
There are a couple in the conference. Tennessee and Bama are both playing extremely, mm-hmm. extremely impressive basketball. Florida and Kentucky. I know Kentucky lost earlier this week.
Florida's really playing well.
Florida's playing good ball. And we talked, and Mississippi State dismantled Pitt last night, too, a top 25
the
team.
The SEC just sort of, like,
yeah,
they really big-boyed the ACC.
And Auburn and Kentucky didn't win their games against the ACC.
They were the top two-ranked teams from the SEC are the only ones that didn't win.
Yeah, and go ahead and dismiss either of those teams at your own peril. We talked about when Mark Pope was building his team at Kentucky, prioritizing seemingly the best or one of the top two or three defensive players at every position in the portal and seeing what kind of team you can build with that. There are probably going to be nights where they don't score enough. And probably against top tier competition, but they're going to throw sand in the gears every night in what you're doing, and that was so important last night. Billis talked a lot about when teams last night were able to run their offense, clean offense, and get through the ball pressure, the initial pressure. It tended to mean good things for that team. It was Auburn. Auburn was probably running their cleanest offense of the game.
The start of the game, and then post game, Stephen Pearl on the Auburn Network post game show, and then Bruce Pearl in with the media. The first thing they both said was, "We didn't play well defensively. We've got to play better than that defensively to have a chance to win when you go on the road."
Yeah, I think if you'd asked Bruce, if we'd raised our hand at the movie premiere,
78 points. 8 turnovers, out rebound. I mean, exact same number of field goals. One more three. You out rebounded them, and you had 8 turnovers. You would go, yeah, we won that one.
Yeah, if you'd been able to just have the Auburn side of the box score. If you said, Bruce, here's what the Auburn box score looks like with 78 points.
Well, I'll show you. Show you everything except their turnovers. I mean, and free throws.
You might be a little worried.
If you look at the field goals,
might be a little worried about 20 fouls.
But Auburn outscored them by one from the floor. They outscored them by 1 point from the floor, and they out rebounded them by 5.
And I thought as I understand Bruce wants to take away a desire to he comes away from that game with a desire for his defense to play better. I would look at that and I'd say Duke was hitting low percentage shots against this Auburn team at times.
Isaiah Evans,
the flamethrower.
It's like a couple of times it looked like Auburn didn't realize he was on the court.
A couple of times it looked
because
like
he was wide open a couple
on
times
five.
In the corner.
A couple of times Auburn was playing 4-on-5.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
it's like they're playing in there. Guys are double teaming flag, and oh by the way, here's a guy wide open in the corner who hit 6 straight threes.
Like when a football team subs. And he
stands on the sideline.
Or they forget to send in an 11th, and it's like a defense is playing with 10, and it's like, how'd that guy get so open?
Yeah.
Oh, the defense. Well, that's at times, but you're right. I thought at other times, look, Cooper Flagg has the ability to hit. I mean, he has Anthony Davis like game for that size.
He does, and he is so mature for his years. But he also is very mature in his ability to. to use his off arm. He's very good at not being obvious. He can do a slight hook or a little. He can get a push without it appearing obvious. And I mean that's a skill. But yeah, he's really, really good.
Yeah, and when you take away like one aspect of his game and sort of ask him to beat you with other stuff, he still can. Like he's gonna play. I think the good news for all of college basketball is he's almost assuredly a 1 year and done type of player. Mm-hmm. But beyond that,
he's projected to be maybe the number one pick.
I tell you what, we got Dan hanging on. Let's take a break.
Yeah, we will.
And I don't want to cut Dan short, to go to commercial. No. So we're gonna go to break, then we'll go back. Abbreviated show, like you said.
Right. We're on for about another 25 minutes. You can join us on The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on The Drive text box. That's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So we'll get to our first break, and Dan is up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Come in and get it out of your system.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Again, an abbreviated show. We've got about 20 minutes until we have to turn things over to the Auburn Network for Auburn, Virginia women's basketball. Let's get to The Drive hotline, and Dan is up first. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Hey, bud.
I would have loved to win the game, but I was really excited and impressed by how good we played. And I don't think anybody watching that game thinks any less of Auburn right now.
No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, a lot of people watching it think more of Auburn after that.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you bring Duke to our arena, they would have the same type of problems. You know, it's like the toughest place to play.
And they might bring Duke to Auburn or to Neville Arena next season as part of the ACC-SEC Challenge.
I hope so.
Depending on what happens.
I think
return visits for both, especially since, after the games we got last night between Bama, North Carolina early.
A lot of ACC teams may want to shuffle that around after those other 14 that lost.
Start playing the Mountain West or something instead of the SEC after something like, hey Dan, we were talking during the commercial break about sort of not the conundrum at point guard, but sort of the thing Bruce Pearl has to work with over the next couple of weeks, which is, I think you'd love to play Tahad Moore. As Bill mentioned, he's got to defend without fouling. Denver Jones, I think he's given you good minutes at the point.
He's not turning it over, but he's playing good defense, but it takes away from Denver's offense.
And he's better offensively as an off-ball guard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think typically what happens with Denver is, he's more of a spot-up guy on the outside. And if you go down low to Janai, and then you're able to pass it back out.
Yep.
But just Janai one-on-one, it was a lot harder for him with all those bigger guys and being as tall. But, I think Denver will be fine. Look, this is a tough place. I mean, you could really go and say, look, we had four guys that showed up in that game, and then the rest, I don't know what happened to them. but, I mean, the guys that showed up, I mean, you have some real serious ballers. I mean, right now,
Chad is not afraid of
anything. And Miles can hit from miles.
Yeah, he was.
My goodness,
he was shooting from Gastonia. Yeah. Some of those last night.
Yeah, I thought we made some really great adjustments after the half. You know, the only thing is on offense. So I wish we could have gotten Miles maybe a few more looks, and even Chad a few more looks. I mean, because those guys are really hot right now. But you made a comment earlier. About us rebounding in the first half, we got out rebounded by 9
solidly, and then Auburn ended up out rebounding them by 5.
Yeah, so we had a plus 14 in the second half. So mm-hmm. we figured something out, or we, made some adjustments on the rebounding and blocked them out or something. But I think we are making great adjustments. And look, I chances are, they love to put people in the same bracket, after you played them in the year to have those cool TV rematches. And I'm kind of nervous that. And if we get stuck with Duke and Iowa State, I mean, like, we're going to have another murderer's row like we did in 2019. But I don't know. I don't have a problem. If we play them on a neutral court, I think we'd have a great shot.
Oh, absolutely. But absolutely.
I got one small thing. On the polls, okay, we're number 2 right now. Is there any reason why, obviously we lost to Duke, but losing to Duke at Duke is that's just a wall. I mean, we basically played them even for the most part.
Hmm.
But, yeah, we already have all the other wins. But with Kansas losing by 13 to Creighton, who's got a lot of losses. And Tennessee, the only team that they played is Baylor, who's already got three losses, and they played them at home. So I don't know. I think Auburn could still move up to the one slot even after this week.
Ooh, it's an interesting question, Dan, because I don't know if I think moving Auburn up to the one in a week where they lose wouldn't be necessarily unprecedented. Might be a little bit surprising. I think Tennessee's in good shape as the only team in the top four that didn't lose a game this week. So far, they might
haven't
be able,
played anybody.
I know they haven't played anybody, but they might be able to survive. I mean, they were able to get to three without having played anybody. Mm-hmm. If they survive another week as an undefeated team,
they probably would move up. You know what? I don't mind not being number one in here. I mean, like they were saying last night. You know, Auburn's a team that plays with a chip on its shoulder. I think they like that. I think they like using the disrespect thing, so that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
They're back up to number one in KenPom, if I'm not mistaken.
You've also got a Gonzaga Kentucky game on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and the winner of that game, I know Kentucky lost earlier this week. Gonzaga's 7, but they've only lost one game this year.
Right.
The winner of that game could be in a position to make a move in the poll. But no, I don't know how often 1, 2, and 4 lose in a 72-hour stretch.
I don't know. It happened last year. Everybody that hit number one lost. As soon as they hit it, they lost.
But to see three of the top four lose this early in the week, it could really shake up the polls. And I think if you ignore recency and just go by resume, I think Auburn belongs at number one right now. It's just a matter of it's just a matter of looking at when did teams lose and things like that. But I mean Lenardi's got Auburn as number one in his bracketology, and I don't think that changes with a loss at Duke.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to go on the road and lose and look bad. I mean, but look, we went toe-to-toe with them, so I don't really think, to me, it's a loss. And I'm honestly, if you're going to lose a game, I mean, lose that one because it's not going to hurt you at all, you know. But I just think that you know, in losing, I think the whole world goes, wow, they went toe-to-toe in Cameron Indoor. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, plus what we've already done. So anyway, all right, I appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a great week.
Appreciate the call, Dan. 334-321-1390.
Probably as good a loss as you could have in college basketball these days is a road loss at Duke because of the because of, especially, I mean, even, I would say a road loss at a top 10 team is going to hurt you as little as any you could, you know, any game you could possibly schedule. And and Bruce Pearl has mentioned, you know, he knows he's got to he's got to find a way to he's got to find a way to get these games on the schedule, and playing them at Cameron Indoor or at Houston is how he does it. We'll see next year if the SEC or if the powers that be, probably ESPN more than anybody else, rewards Auburn for having played this game with a big marquee ACC opponent like Duke or North Carolina at Neville Arena.
I'm looking at the NCAA's strength of schedule. Right now, I mean, some familiar names. Auburn is at the top. Auburn's number one. Alabama is 2. Duke 3. Baylor 4. Houston 5. North Carolina 6. Kansas 7. Memphis 8. Auburn's played, what, 3 of those others right there already that are in the top 8. And they're there partly because they played Auburn.
4-1 in quad 1 games now, the Auburn Tigers. And
Iowa State's 10, by the way. There's Gonzaga 9 and Iowa State 10. Goodness.
I mean, and again, we're talking 8 games into the season, and 5 of them have been quad 1 games, and they pick up their first loss in that game last night at Cameron Indoor.
Auburn has played 5 of the other 9 teams in the top 10 in strength of schedule. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got a little over 10 minutes to go. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
To the Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday. Again, a reminder that we will only be on for a few more minutes because the Auburn women are taking part in the ACC-SEC Challenge. As someone said, it's the SEC-ACC Challenge for sure on the men's side after going 14-2 over the last 2 days.
And I know we were just talking about how cool it would be next year if Auburn got to host a team like Duke or North Carolina, a big marquee ACC opponent. And I still believe that to be true, Bill. If the committee or the ESPN folks had a sense of humor, they might send us Virginia. Like that might be there.
Yeah,
I know the time, you know, and time heals all wounds and stuff like that. But
yeah, well, now you've lost one at Cameron, and you want them to see what it's like in front of the jungle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that would be a really cool, you know, and Duke will look very different next year because
Auburn
will look very different.
You have
a lot of, you know what, a lot of guys on that court last night.
Maybe you want to wait a year or so before you bring Duke back.
A lot of guys on that court last night were playing their last year of college basketball. Mm-hmm. Some of them are playing their first year. Yeah, some of them are also playing their first year of college basketball, but a lot of them aren't. That's a really talented Duke team, and you're right. Both of those teams. I would encourage fans of both teams to get to, you know, try to see these teams as much as you can, both in person and on television. You know, and just savor every drop you're going to get because I think two teams that could have really special seasons were head to head last night in Auburn and Duke.
Yeah, Alabama pretty impressive in Chapel Hill last night.
That's a really good Alabama team when Sears is and tough news with is it Reitzel who's out for the season?
Yeah, Latrell.
With the Achilles. They're pulling they got a guard. Everyone forgot about Houston Millett, right? He's the one who transferred to Bama during the tournament. And he was going to redshirt this year because they added some other young players including Filon. Sounds like he's going to not, you know.
As a matter of fact, I think he's going to be ready to go Saturday.
Yeah, they pulled the red shirt off of him. It sounds like, and so they have some depth, you know, waiting in the wings. But I think there's going to be a larger role for Filon. There's going to be a pretty big role for Aiden Holloway.
Aiden Holloway is coming off the bench, but he is shooting it very well early on for them. Off the bench.
Gives them a chance. Yeah.
Hit five threes last night for him.
And he was sharing minutes with Reitzel, who's hurt now. I mean, I think between Sears, Filon, Millett, and Holloway, you got to fill something like 80 minutes.
Yeah, Aiden's been playing close to 20.
Yeah, I think you've got a four guard rotation there, and Grant Nelson getting better, you know, as the season goes on.
Murray
too.
Murray really is helping them.
Yeah, they're excellent. I mean, it's Tennessee, like we were just saying, has a real argument to be number one. Kentucky looks great, even with the loss to Clemson this week. Florida's playing high level ball. Both of the Mississippi schools. It's going to be.
This league is wildly dangerous.
It's going to be nothing like we've ever seen before when conference play starts because of the quality of play at the top of this league.
It's going to be like recruiting. It's going to be like recruiting.
Right there.
When we looked yesterday, and 12 of the top 20 teams are from the SEC. You know, I mean, it's not quite there yet, but I mean, it is just insane.
Tell you what, Georgia's got a tournament team too.
Yeah, they do. Georgia's much better.
Georgia's much better. Aza Newell is absolutely, you know, would play anywhere and looks like a pro. Like Georgia's got something going.
They're keeping some of those Georgia kids home.
Yes, best Georgia team in a while, and a big reason why. Yeah, one of the reasons is because they landed a big star like Aza Newell out there.
Yeah, so I mean, it is really fun here early on. The dust settling a little bit from high school recruiting. The portal, man, have you noticed so many players announcing they're getting into the portal? And from this league, two teams.
Kentucky.
And LSU.
Yeah.
Kentucky and LSU just seems like every time look back, there's another player.
LSU feels pretty good about the signing day they just had, right? Like LSU's looking at and thinking.
Considering they lost seven commitments in the last 2 weeks.
Who was the big flip? The Florida State flip is a big.
Flipped a big offensive tackle.
Offensive tackle anybody would want.
They lost Underwood. They lost another guy.
They knew the Underwood thing was going to be. But they almost, I mean, there was a sense the winds were blowing in the wrong direction there.
They were trending.
I guess I was just thinking about the Florida State flip.
They were trending as a team that could have the best class, and instead they end up eighth and sixth in the SEC. So, I mean, it's not bad, but then you combine that with all the players. I mean, they're losing two or three receivers have gone into the portal. But Kentucky, my goodness, Kentucky players are jumping in the portal like the building's on fire or something. So it'll be really interesting to see.
The kick returner and receiver.
And receiver.
Yeah.
They've lost their top two receivers, their tight end.
The Berrien?
Yes.
Yeah, Berrien. He can play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a nice.
Dane Key's pretty darn good, too.
Yeah, Dane Key's excellent. A nice pickup, you know, whoever lands those two.
I would think Auburn's probably looking at those guys and a few others. We can talk more about that tomorrow, but we're just about out of time here on the Thursday edition of The Drive.
We're going to have I think we're going to have a Tiger Takes at some point.
Yes, we do. We'll have Dylan Cardwell interview tomorrow. That will be coming up. We'll check in with Barrett Salee. We'll check in with him at the first. You know, I didn't realize that we were going to be short. I'll check and see if we can get David Paschal as well for a brief bit tomorrow, since we're out of time here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Auburn women's basketball coming up next on the Auburn Network as part of the SEC-ACC Challenge, the Tigers in Charlottesville to take on Virginia. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.